If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So welcome to the ESPN Player Gridiron College Football Show. I'm Simon Clancy, along with editor Matthew Sherry. Matt, another busy week of college football. Upsets, near upsets, great individual performances, some Heisman Trophy candidates sort of rising to the top, the cream coming up. Great stuff across the nation, all the sort of hullabaloo you'd expect from a Saturday in autumn. How was your weekend? How was your college football weekend?
I mean, it was a late weekend because I spent Saturday in Benidorm, which is hardly a hub of college football, on a pretty ropey stag do. No, the stag do was good fun, but obviously it was Benidorm. So I watched all the games on Sunday. I managed to brilliantly avoid all the scores and watch them as if live. So I essentially had a six-hour college football lead into the NFL, which was pretty awesome. Thoughts? When I looked at the slate for week two, I was thinking, well, there's not any real amazing high wire games. But actually, from a storylines perspective, I think, and this is often what you see in college football, it was as fascinating as maybe any weekend we'll get in the season. I think it also featured the outstanding game of the first couple of weeks as well in Clemson, Texas A&M, because I thought both teams played really well. I thought we saw some really interesting games in week one in which teams maybe weren't executing at the highest level, but I thought the A&M Clemson game was actually just a very good game between two teams playing really well. One, Clemson, who were the better team but playing in one of the toughest road environments in college football, and a second team in Texas A&M who nobody expected to win, who essentially came very, very close to tying the game at the end and showed a lot for what they've done in the first 2 weeks under a new coach, and Jimbo Fisher has been about as noteworthy as any team in college football, I think, given the expectations entering the season.
I said in the column and on this podcast last week that Kellen Mond essentially needed a Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M type performance, and he almost did have one, didn't he? I mean, that was a furious comeback in the fourth quarter. And, you know, they were unlucky to lose at the end.
Yeah, and I mean, you felt like all the momentum had they converted the two-point conversion, I think they'd have won the game, because you felt like the momentum of that game had completely switched. So, yeah, it was really fascinating. And I think it bodes well for Texas A&M under Jimbo Fisher. I mean, the fans were literally chanting his name as he walked off after a loss, which is a great sign, and a sign that they're already ahead of expectation.
Dabo Swinney has continued the two-headed quarterback attack with Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence. And he feels like, I mean, he talked about how he sees no different to how you'd rotate linebackers in and out. At some point, do you think he's got to make it? I mean, Clemson's schedule now is not a difficult one all the way to the ACC championship game. So, you know, could we see this dual-headed beast the entire way?
I'm of the opinion that Dabo essentially wants Trevor Lawrence to win the job at some point. I think Kelly Bryant is the favourite now because I thought he looked a lot better than Lawrence. I know we've been really high on Lawrence, but you could just see a big difference in the A&M offense when Bryant was running it. But I think because the schedule is so easy now for the next few weeks, it gives Dabo the license to keep Ben Lawrence in. I just think that if I was looking at it from Dabo's perspective, I would say when you get to the CFP against a Georgia or an Alabama, two teams who now have legit defenses and great quarterback play, I think you'll need quarterback play, real quarterback play. And I think he knows that. And I think he wants Trevor Lawrence firing on all cylinders by that point. But I definitely think we see the job share for the next month and a half, because that's what they need to take advantage of, is this schedule. And I think Trevor Lawrence looks a better player 2 months down the line if he has a test like College Station. That was a that was a tough wake-up call environment for your second game in college football. And he didn't look terrible by any means. He just didn't look in control of the offense as the guy who essentially started for a whole year before him, which is understandable.
105,000 at Kyle Field is always going to be a tough thing for. Doesn't matter if you're a 5-year starter or you're a true freshman. Let's go to the two big upsets of the weekend: Arizona State over Michigan State. We called it as our upset special in the column and on the podcast. The job that Herm Edwards has done, first of all, laughing stock really when he was signed. 10 years since he'd been a head coach anywhere. 30 years since he'd been on a college football sideline. Hired by Ray Anderson, the AD at Arizona State, who was his agent. Nobody's laughing now, are they?
Absolutely not. How could you? He's been fantastic, hasn't he? I mean, the main thing I would say about the two Arizona State games, and I've watched them both, is they look well coached. I mean, you can always tell when a team is prepared because of coaching, and I think that is essentially exactly what we're seeing from Arizona State. I think they've looked fantastic. And the most impressive part to me about this week is they beat a Michigan State team at their own game by winning in the trenches, by being dominant on just in those areas. That is all Michigan State are. That's Michigan State are a blue-collar team who have been very successful under Mark D'Antonio, doing it that way, winning in the trenches. And Arizona State beat them at their own game, and I thought that was so impressive. And it's just so impressive how they've looked generally, and I'm fascinated to see now how they're doing that in a Pac-12 that I think is getting a little bit more interesting, because I think Stanford have looked as good as any two teams in the country over the first 2 weeks again. San Diego State, who actually Arizona State played this week, I think, are a team with a really good defense, with a defense that does a lot of different things, a lot of different pressure schemes, and Stanford handled them really well. And then again, and I'm assuming we'll talk about later on, went in and beat USC this week. So I think the Pac-12, after a really bad week one with Washington, is getting just a little bit more interesting because of those two teams, as well as Oregon, who have also looked pretty good with Justin Herbert at quarterback for the opening couple of weeks as well.
And Edwards brought in guys like John Simon and Rob Likens and Sean Slocum, kind of NFL veterans. But he's also got this kind of, because we talked about what you talked about coaching there, he's also got a couple of former NFL players sort of working as analysts. Derek Hagan, who was a third-round pick of the Miami Dolphins, a former Arizona State receiver, who was always seen as somewhat a kind of a coach on the field. But interestingly, Kevin Mawai also worked, the all-pro center, who obviously Edwards coached at the Jets, is a kind of a football analyst working both on game film and with the players. Very interesting kind of way that he's clearly not revolutionising the way college football, but bringing in veteran NFL guys, you know, because let's not beat about the bush. Kids generally are playing college football so they can get to the league, aren't they? I mean, and to be around these kind of guys, to be around a Kevin Mawai, you know, one of the most kind of respected men in the NFL over the past 15 or 20 years, is a boon not only for the coaching staff, but also for the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're essentially looking for a pathway to the NFL, and you're being spoken to by guys who have not only executed that pathway, they've actually done it at an outrageously high level. So how could that not inspire you as a college kid? And I just think it's at times I think we're too quick for knee-jerk reactions, and I think that's been proven out with him, because he's done an incredible job over the first 2 weeks. I mean, I think if you looked at those 2 weeks, I think I picked them in on a bet that I placed to be upset in week one against the spread, and that never happened. They dominated, and then, as I said, they looked awesome this week. So I like everything they're doing with the program, because it's an interesting angle to take. And essentially, I think Herm is the coach, and they're almost looking to have like a GM style approach in terms of recruiting and do something different with that. And at the end of the day, When you're a big time program like Arizona State, who hasn't really had huge success, why not try something different? And I applaud them for that and hope it continues to work.
Danny Gonzalez's defense has given up just 65 yards on 61 carries in two games, which in itself is phenomenal. Manny Wilkins, the quarterback, has clearly put himself in the Heisman hunt, and we'll talk about that later as well. Arizona State now with their first top 25 ranking in the AP poll since the 2015 preseason, I think. But, and there is a big but, there is a very tough schedule to come. San Diego State this weekend, but then Washington next weekend. They play USC, they play Stanford. the bubble will probably burst at some point for the Sun Devils, would you not think, given the... Yeah, I mean, look, if they beat Washington next week, then all bets are off, right?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think that's the test game to see how this actually plays out against the real power of their division. But I think I give them a chance, and I'm fascinated to see that game. Now, you couldn't have told me before week one that I'd be looking at that game as one that I was really excited for. I don't think they'll win. I mean, if they did, it would be incredible given what he inherited and the fact that it's his first year. But I think from a more long-term perspective, the signs are good that Herm Edwards could be a long-term coach for Arizona State.
Let's go to another upset. Nebraska, Scott Frost. So much excitement about him coming back to the Cornhuskers. Beaten 33-28 by Colorado. I'm inclined to my first question to be what happened, but really what happened was Stephen Montez, the quarterback, and Laviska Shenault, the sophomore receiver, who just had magical games. Montez looks 6'5", 220. Daniel Jeremiah was tweeting about him on Saturday night. You know, he looks like an NFL, a legitimate NFL quarterback. And the way he played, the way he brought, you know, the way he brought Colorado back into the game when Adrian Martinez got going, down 14-0, then came back into the game. His winning touchdown pass to Shenault, just his overall leadership, his overall... And Colorado's not a team that hugely gets talked about, but, you know, both of these guys could end up being up there with the Michael Westbrooks, the Cordell Stewarts, the Rashan Salams, the great players of Colorado Buffalo football history.
I mean, I think Shenault is going to be a top 10.
No, me too.
In the NFL. The guy is absolutely out of this world. Did a bit of digging on him, having watched him in this game. And essentially, this is a kid who was offered by Alabama and TCU. He decided he wanted to get away from the sunshine, I believe. So it came between Colorado and another team, and he chose Colorado. So he's a legit talented kid. And he looks awesome, doesn't he? I mean, I don't think 21
catches, 388 yards this season, 6'2", 202 pounds. He is legit.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any shame in losing to a team with a quarterback and a wide receiver like that for Scott Frost. I mean, there were some things in the game I didn't love, but one that you mentioned in the column about the play-action pass with kind of 7 seconds left on the
clock. Yeah, I mean, why would you do that?
That's a big no-no for me. But, he is a guy. They're two guys who have NFL futures. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that's what's so great about college football. There's a lot of focus on the big teams, but you spot these players in lesser teams and they just emerge as big stars. And it's great to watch. But yeah, I think Shenault is a special, special talent.
He was a bit of concern from Scott Frost after the game. Adrian Martinez left with an injury, and there seemed to be a sort of some accusations flying about that perhaps Martinez had his leg twisted in the pile, and that was why he limped out the game. No structural damage. Seems like he's going to play this weekend. But any justification to that, or
that's football, isn't it? What goes on at the bottom of those piles is not something that anybody would want to watch.
That's why you and I talk on podcasts, Matthew. And
yeah, exactly.
Big time college football.
I don't think there's any legit concern. I mean, at the end of the day, if he can't handle that, I know he's a true freshman, but he shouldn't be on the field, should he? So it is what it is.
Let's get to the state of Florida. An absolute, total and utter omnishambles, I think, is probably the best. Let's start with the good. You mentioned them earlier on. I mean, Central Florida now has a 15-game win streak, and are quite patently the kings of the state. Miami did win this weekend, I think, against Lafayette State. Florida, let's start with Dan Mullen's Gators. They lost to Kentucky at home. They didn't just lose to Kentucky. They were pretty much dominated in the swamp by the major college football powerhouse that is the Kentucky Wildcats. And I am, ladies and gentlemen, being facetious. The first time since 1986, I think, that Kentucky have topped Florida, either home or away. Just a staggering... And what's happened to the Gator program? I mean, this is one of the most heralded programs of the past 20 years in terms of college football notoriety. Where has it all gone wrong?
I mean, I think it's several years of continuous ineptitude kind of coming home to roost, isn't it? I really like Dan Mullen, and I hope that fan base is one of the worst in the country for not just getting on board and letting things play out over time. So I hope that the pressure doesn't start to mount on him immediately. I went into the season thinking Mullen could have a really good first year because I always assume that there's talent on the roster. But is there talent on the roster? I mean, it didn't look like it. Is it Florida or Florida State where a kid tweeted that he wanted to transfer in the locker room after the game?
It could be either, quite frankly.
I think it was Florida. So that's not a great sign for Mullen by any stretch. But it's just... I mean, I don't know where you go from there. They've nearly lost to Kentucky a few times over the last few years, so it's been coming this, but it's a shocking start for Mullen.
But how does this happen in such a fertile recruiting hotbed of the state of Florida?
I imagine they've always been pretty strong in the recruiting rankings. I think it comes back to what we said last week, which is it's great having these recruiting classes every year, but if you don't coach them up properly and instill kind of the discipline necessary, then much like draft picks who go to the wrong NFL team and fail, like Corey Coleman at the Browns, it won't work. And I think there's been problems at Florida now for several years. And I just think eventually that bottoms out. And I think this is the process we're in now, is bottoming out, and hopefully for Gator fans it rebuilds under good coaching from Dan Mullen.
But recruiting misses obviously hurt everybody. They're clearly hurting Florida. But so is a lack of player development. So is a lack of accountability. You know, you look at Florida and Florida State, who we're going to go to talk about. There's no obvious leaders on the field. There's no alphas calling the shots. There's no swagger. And Florida State tried to get this swagger back with this just ludicrous turnover backpack, which we'll get to in a minute. But just the worst thing I've seen in college football for many a year. It's just... I mean, when the Gators were competing for a national championship, this is what they had, but there's no physicality, there's no aggressiveness. Players are kind of going through the motions. And also, that's not a Dan Mullen. You know, this was not Dan Mullen football that we knew and we loved at Mississippi State. I know that there's no real foundation to speak of, you know, and Florida have struggled, you know, for a few, as a Florida State, really, but Florida have struggled for a few years. But it's just, I don't know, it's just not happening for the Gators at all. And they really haven't had a quarterback, have they, since Tebow left either. There's not really been a serviceable passer. They certainly didn't have one under Jim McElwain. You know, where's that? That seems to be where it's going wrong. Recruit a good quarterback.
Well, the only thing is that they surely think that they have, because Emory Jones was a five-star recruit who flipped to them after Mullen got there. And I'm interested, that's the only interesting thing in the season for me now with Florida, is does Emory Jones eventually come in, and if so, what does it look like? Because he's got super talent, and he's the kind of guy that I think when Mullen gets hold of him, and clearly Mullen is comfortable taking him along slowly because he's still playing Philippe Francois, who is not a good quarterback. So... yeah, it's interesting.
But don't forget, this is a kid, you talk about being a five-star recruit, but it goes back to something that we just talked about. You know, they were involved in this incident a couple of months ago, weren't they? That included lying to the police and brandishing air guns. And, you know, this was Tyree Cleveland, their highest recruit, along with defensive tackle Kyrie Campbell and Emory Jones. And you just think, you know, these were kind of on-campus confrontations of the campus police with weapons in inverted commas that involved this sort of shady Gainesville area gambler. I mean, it's astonishing.
It's not been. And the thing I'd say is, I mean, I wonder whether that is why Philippe Franks eventually won the quarterback job and whether that's some kind of holdout punishment. But the worry for me in a place like Florida is, we saw this under Urban Meyer, even the glory years of Florida, as we alluded to in podcast one, were mired by, well, mired's a very good metaphor for that, isn't it? It was just this undercurrent of ill discipline and these kids getting away with murder, essentially, in the area that they were at, the university is in. And I just wonder how toxic.
Quite literally, if you're Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you only have to look at these. You only have to look at the players who have come from that program, and it does make you wonder about whether it's an institutional problem rather than, because Dan Mullen, I mean, this guy is a coach who inspires discipline, did it at Mississippi State, has done a good job, and you wonder whether is it slightly deeper than just who is your coach at Florida in this day and age.
You're listening to the ESPN Player Gridiron College Football Show with me, Simon Clancy, Matthew Sherry, the Gridiron Magazine editor. We are in the state of Florida looking at the Omni Shambles that is essentially Florida and Florida State. Let's move on to the Seminoles. Willie Taggart had brought back everything that the fan base had asked for. He built up a huge cachet of goodwill towards him, good feeling. Bobby Bowden was reintroduced to the program, the ex-players, especially around the 25th anniversary. The Charlie Ward, the kind of the Peter Warwicks were re-embraced. The fan base was re-energized. You know, if you watched, as we did, that game against Virginia Tech, the opening kickoff, the moments ahead of that kickoff, Doak Campbell Stadium was as bouncing as it's been for years. There was a real feeling of, okay, the Seminoles are back. And all of a sudden, from kickoff through till what happened on Saturday, it's just dissipated and every ounce of goodwill has gone. I mean, they were favoured by 31 points against FCS Samford. The team that they only play Samford because it's Bobby Bowden's alma mater. That's the only reason that they're on the Gators schedule every year, because they get a significant amount of money and it's a sort of a nod to the fact that that's where Bobby Bowden, you know, learned his chops. The Seminoles trailed Samford for 56 minutes of this game, only finally going ahead late in the fourth quarter. Ended up winning 36-26 in a game that was much, much closer than that. As I said, they pulled out this turnover backpack. And I don't know if you didn't follow college football or you're new to it, the University of Miami last year brought out something called the turnover chain, which was any time there was a turnover, interception or whatever, defensively, they would give this kind of big chain to the player that did it. It was fun. It was funny.
And I think Boise State have a turnover thrown, which is also right. Pretty cool.
And it harks back, certainly with Miami, it harks back to that era of kind of Vinny Testaverde and Sean Taylor and Ed Reed and those kind of guys through that whole kind of University of Miami, the U kind of conceit, Warren Sapp, those kind of things where, you know, there was they had that swagger. You know, they had that edge to them. The Clinton Portis days, those sorts of things. The turnover backpack, to bring it out, first of all, against Samford, an FCS team that you're trading to, is horrendous enough. For it to be a backpack anyway, it was just whoever, it's ludicrosity. Whoever brought that idea out should be fired on the spot. But there are deeper issues at FSU than just a backpack. That team is failing forwards fast. I mean, Willie Taggart has an awful lot of work to do.
I'm interested to ask about Willie Taggart because I nearly did this in the off-season. But I know he did a great job at USF. Didn't move mountains at Oregon, although he was only there for a year, I think, one season. But I did have some misgivings about him. The main one being that Oregon led college football in penalties last year, which I think is indescribably bad for a big coach. There's no way a good coach should have a team that is bottom of the list against so many other teams in that. I have not seen a guy have a worse 2 weeks in charge of a big program than this. Because I put 90% of what happened in the Virginia Tech game squarely on his shoulders. And this was an absolute disgrace. I mean, you know, there's some FCS teams like North Dakota State who, when they go and play a power program, you think, this could always be an upset. Samford are not one of those teams. Even a small amount. I mean, this should be a Florida State, like, 55-3 kind of game. Not losing for 56 minutes. I'm interested to see how it works out for Willie Taggart. The guy is clearly very intelligent. He clearly talks very well. He clearly knows how to play the game, which is as important for coaching as anything else. I'm not fully convinced yet how good a coach he is.
CBS preseason spoke to 1/5 of the 129 active coaches leading FBS teams entering the 2018 season. They asked for their honest opinions on everything from coaching to social issues, all that sort of things. And they've been sort of drip releasing this information over the past couple of weeks. One of the questions they asked was, who are the most overrated and underrated coaches in college football? The most overrated coaches, they came back with their poll. The most overrated coaches in reverse order. 13% said Lane Kiffin, 13% said Kirk Ferentz, 19% said James Franklin at Penn State, and the winner with 20% was Willie Taggart. Now, they asked them to then justify their ratings. And here's a number of what people said. I would say that Willie Taggart at Florida State is the most overrated. He was only at Oregon for 1 year, and it's not like he transformed that program. And that's a place that's won for a long time. It's not that he isn't good, necessarily. He's won. But usually when you get a job like FSU, it's because you've won some championships or done something really amazing. Somebody else then replied, Willie Taggart has to be the most overrated because he still has a career losing record. What's that all about? Somebody else said, we're going to see in the next 3 years what happens with Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. That disaster last year at FSU, he prides himself on being just like Nick Saban. But I think they will discover that he was more Nick Saban than they'd like to think, because the Willie Taggart era will not necessarily be a good one. So it's interesting. That's coming from other coaches in college football.
I just wonder whether he's the kind of guy who's just very good friends with a lot of media members, because I mean, I've thought that, but then I was thinking, well, a lot of people seem to speak well of him. It seemed like everybody was declaring it as this great coup when Florida State managed to get him. So you just think, well, maybe you've just got it wrong. But that's fascinating now, because that's guys who've probably game planned against his teams. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, I disagree with some of the people on that list, interestingly enough, but I do agree massively on Target.
Do you want to, let me just give you, for some context, let me give you who they said were the most underrated, if you like. Let me just find it again.
Gary Patterson should be top of this list.
Gary Patterson was definitely on that list. Typically, I've just gone off the page. Here we go. So, again, as I did before, in reverse order, the most underrated coaches, Carl Whittingham of Utah, Pat Fitzgerald of Northwestern, which is a great shout.
Yeah, it is.
Dan Mullen of Florida, who we just talked about, Chris Peterson of Washington, and David Shaw of Stanford.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but I don't think Shaw's underrated. If he ever decided he was going to the NFL, he would have a job in 2 minutes.
And Mark D'Antonio was also on that list of Michigan State. Blake Anderson of Arkansas State, who's a very good coach, actually. And then Jeff Brom and Paul Christ, who are excellent coaches.
Christ is high on the list for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, very interesting to see. But, I mean, DeAndre Francois and Cam Akers aside, that team needs some serious help, and they are hurting. They really are hurting. Now, speaking of hurting, let's jump onto injuries. Rodney Anderson and Trey Adams, two of the biggest stars in college football, really, when you look at things with an NFL hat on. Adams could have been a top 15 pick, left tackle at the University of Washington, could have been a top 15 pick if he'd come out last year, tore his ACL in October, missed the rest of the season, decided to stay in. Last week against Auburn, he was going to be back. He practiced through the spring and the summer. He then was inactive for the Auburn game because of what we were told, a back injury. And then it was announced last week that he would now miss the rest of the season, having had back surgery. The issue has not been made clear. But that's a huge loss because, again, you know, a good season from him would have catapulted him into the top 10. Rodney Anderson, the Oklahoma running back, potentially more devastating given the pressure now that puts on Kyler Murray. Anderson, again, would have been a first-round pick last year if he'd come out. Fits that Lincoln Riley pro-style, sort of Mike Leachy, you know, offense that they run there. So a lot of pressure now on three guys. Matt, who do you think? Trey Sermon, the sophomore who had 744 yards rushing last year as a freshman. Marcellus Sutton, the senior. And then they've got this kid, TJ Pledger, the true freshman from California. He was the number five back in the nation, according to Rivals. Great hands, which is obviously what you need in a Lincoln Riley offense, but chose Oklahoma over Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, Florida, Michigan, Oregon, Notre Dame, pretty much anybody you could think of. You'd suspect that Pledger, despite Sermon's performance, Pledger could get in the game early and often, but they are going to need those guys, aren't they, to really step up to the plate if Oklahoma are going to carry through their tremendous start, because Anderson is a big loss.
Yeah, he is. But, I mean, Oklahoma, just one of those programs that always have good running backs. And clearly it's something institutionally that they target with their recruiting. So I think they'll be fine. I do think Oklahoma will be fine. I mean, it's a huge loss. I feel for the kid because, I mean, where would he have gone if he'd have declared last year in the draft? I mean, he could have been a first-round pick, couldn't he? So I feel for him more than anyone. But I think Oklahoma will overcome it. I think they'll be fine. I really worry for Washington. I mean, I remember when we spoke before week one, when we found out Trey Adams was inactive for that game, And I said to you, that's probably the number one guy that they couldn't afford to lose. So to lose him for the season, I mean, that's a huge. Massive blow for a team who already have lost kind of that big week one opportunity against Auburn. Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really... And left tackles are much harder to come by than running backs, generally.
Yeah. A quick word on... And listen, we don't want to talk about the big teams every week, and we won't. We'll continue to mix and match, and we'll get to some of the smaller teams in a second. But it is worth just mentioning that there was a report on the Paul Feinbaum radio show. Paul Feinbaum, sort of a media celebrity in the South, a very well-respected journalist turned radio presenter in the southern states, very, very close to a number of people around the University of Alabama, especially, but also Georgia, South Carolina, those sorts of things. A report on his radio show this week said that it was his belief that Jalen Hurts would transfer out of Alabama. Now, the rules have changed this season, haven't they, Matt, in terms of red shirts. Now, Hurts, essentially, in the past, if you played a down, that meant that you were unable to redshirt, you're unable to move on to another. And when we mean what we say by redshirt, if you don't know, essentially just means that you sit out the season. So you might hear somebody say, you know, that the redshirt junior, that means he sat out a season as a redshirt. He can practice, he can work out, he can sit in on meetings, but he can't actually play on game day.
And it's usually in their first year that people do it. But in this instance, he's doing it because he wants to play another 2 years of full college football. So if he redshirts, he'll get an extra year of eligibility.
Exactly. So the NCAA's new rules mean that he can play in up to four games this season without burning that redshirt. He's obviously played in their opening two. But Hurts is a very intelligent guy. He's set to graduate already in December of this year, which means that he could then transfer, play for a new school in 2019 and still have two years of eligibility left playing quarterback somewhere, anywhere. I mean, who wouldn't take Jalen Hurts as a quarterback? I mean, you know, if you're a team that's, you know, if you're Florida,
yeah,
for example, I mean, Florida would seem like a perfect landing spot.
Tennessee,
for Jalen Hurts.
There's loads of big time programs who need quarterbacks. UCLA,
exactly. I mean, there is a number. I mean, UCLA with
Chip Kelly would be a horrendously
good fit for Jalen Hurts. So, I think we're both of the opinion that it probably will happen. Tua Tagovailoa really isn't going to, you know, unless he gets injured, he's not going to cede the starting job now, I don't think, moving forward.
Can I just give you my Tua stat?
Yeah.
So when I look at NFL quarterbacks ahead of the draft, I always watch them on third down because I always think that's where you get the most answers. So far, Tua on third down is 10 for 10, 207 yards, and four touchdowns.
Incredible, isn't it?
It's astonishing. And that's what I mean with Jalen Hurts. I mean, this is a guy who's won a lot of games. He's a great college quarterback, but he's just coming up against a force the like of which I'm starting to think we haven't seen in college football for, certainly not at a big-time program, for a good, maybe 20 years. Maybe since Vince Young was in college have I been this excited about a quarterback. I mean, he's fantastic.
He's phenomenal. He is phenomenal. And his pro upside as well, you know, with half an eye on the pro game as well. Because, you know, Vince Young was a projection at the next level, which ultimately didn't work out. Tagovailoa is an NFL quarterback playing college football.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. No doubt whatsoever. Let's have a quick word for Kansas. They had their first road win in 3,282 days. iPads had not been invented. Instagram was a year away from even being created. It was the first year of President Obama's presidency. They go on the road this week to play Central Michigan and come up with a win, 31-7. That's just a phenomenal stat.
A winning style as well, that's the best part.
It wasn't like it was a last-ditch
field goal. It was just, we're just going to blow the doors off this team and probably not win another road game for another 3,000 days.
Exactly. Staying in the state of Kansas, Kansas Wesleyan, who play at the NAIA level, they were 69-0 up. That's 6-9-0 up at half time against little Friends University. You would not want to have been... I mean, what do you say if your Friends University's head coach at half time when you go into the locker room and you're 69-0 down? That's... I mean, that's a hell of a task for anybody.
I always remember when I used to play on a really... When I first started 11-a-side football, I kind of stayed loyal to a really bad team. We were so bad that me and a friend of mine would played up front and were top scorers in the division. And then after the when we got promoted, we went at centre back and just drew every game 0-0. But we'd get relegated, go back up front and swap. We were a terrible team. So I always remember once we were 7-0 down at half time, and our manager then reverted me and my mate back to centre back and said, "Right, lads, it's 0-0 now." That's got to have been a similar conversation to what happened at half time in that game.
I suspect that's exactly what Dion Menley, the head coach, was doing, because yeah. And what's interesting, I'm on the Friends University Falcons website. I didn't just pull Dion Menley's name out of the back of my head, listener. I'm not.
That would have been really impressive.
Their mascot, the Falcon, is a very aggressive looking bird. You know, it's the sort of bird that you turn up at Friends University Stadium and you think, okay, we're in for a tough game today. But alas, its wings have been clipped, shall we say.
I think we need to contact the university. And
I think we do.
If there's 20 podcast listeners out there who fancy it,
yes,
let's go over there and give them a game.
I reckon we wouldn't be 69-0 down at half time. Let's move on to this week, because there's some fantastic games of college football this weekend. Two particularly I want to talk about. Let's talk about first the ESPN Player game that you can see this weekend, a game that will be across ESPN Player, either live or on demand, however you want to do it. And that is the battle between Ohio State and TCU. It should be a really terrific matchup. Number 4 against number 15 should be a really terrific matchup. TCU, the Horned Frogs, sixth best record in college football since 2005. Gary Patterson, one of the great coaches. I mean, we didn't mention him in the underrated list, but he's one of the great coaches in college football. Sean Robinson, a quarterback who can threaten Ohio State on the perimeter in the run game, has got the arm to make all the throws down the field. They have the sixth best defense in the nation coming into this game. I think the fifth best offense. This is going to be a really interesting game, not only because of TCU's ability, not only because of, you know, that you'll get a well-coached Gary Patterson team who will give everything, but also for Ohio State, a bit of a statement game, not only for their interim head coach, because Urban Meyer's still a week away from coming back, but also for Dwayne Haskins, who looks like Haskins, if he continues on this pace, I see no way he doesn't win the Heisman Trophy. And he looks, his accuracy as a quarterback is unerring. He looks like an NFL quarterback. And when I say NFL quarterback, I don't just mean, you know, an average NFL quarterback. He looks like the first overall pick in the draft. So this is going to be a terrific, terrific battle that you can watch live on ESPN Player.
It's going to be so fascinating. I mean, Haskins is a guy we've hardly even mentioned on this podcast, largely because Ohio State have such a terrible first 2 week schedule. But he has been absolutely incredible. And he's a very different to a standard Urban Meyer quarterback, because it's all about the arm with this kid. He's got so much arm talent. And this is a legit, it's so fascinating, this game. Gary Patterson is 22-12 in games where TCU aren't favoured. So he loves this spot. This is exactly where Gary Patterson wants to be. It's in Texas. I think it's at AT&T Stadium.
It is,
and
yeah.
It's just going to be absolutely fascinating, because this is probably the best of the lower-end top college football programs over the last few years, if that makes sense, in TCU, in terms of how consistent they've been, with different types of players as well, against Ohio State, who, it's so fascinating now, because Urban Meyer's still in the building week to week at the moment, but can't coach on game day. Ryan Day's done an incredible job that further confirms that he can basically have his pick of any head coaching job in college football after this season. And it's power meets power, isn't it? It's exactly what you dream of in college football. The only thing that won't play in TCU's favour, as much as I think people believe, is I'm not sure it'll be like a home game for them. I think Ohio State will take a lot of fans to Dallas for this one, and I think it'll be a true neutral field matchup. But it's going to be an absolutely fascinating one.
Do you think the Buckeyes will continue to play? They've been dropping Tate Martell, the highly rated quarterback, into the rotation. They've been playing in the fifth series of every game, and he's come in and he's mixed things up and looked terrific, as ridiculously good as Haskins has looked. Do you think they'll continue to do that?
No, because I think Haskins is so good. I don't think that's going to be a sustainable thing deep into the season, because it's not like, you know, when we're talking about It's interesting that Georgia against South Carolina, for example, barely played Justin Fields this week. You know, that was a game that Dale looked at and thought, a game that we're probably not going to lose, but it should be competitive. And they didn't use him. The difference is, Georgia have Jake Fromm, who is a top five NFL talent. Clemson have Kelly Bryant, who isn't an NFL talent probably, but they have a kid behind him who is. Haskins is an NFL talent. I think there's a difference in those three between Georgia and Ohio State and Clemson. And I think that that difference gets borne out late in the season in that Haskins is too good to take off the field, isn't he? That's the thing. He's so good. Too good to take a guy like that off the field.
This is a TCU defense that's only allowed 19 points so far this season. Generally, under Gary Patterson, the Horned Frogs defense has been the strength of the team. You know, offense has always been good, but defense is really what he's built things around. Have TCU got a chance for the upset?
Yeah, undoubtedly. That's what makes it so interesting. I'm not even sure it would be that much of an upset, and that is despite how talented Ohio State are. It's interesting as well. Ryan Day has obviously done a very good job. This is a different spot for him. I mean, he has essentially got to make the decisions on the fly, on the field, in a big game that should be competitive. That's a tough spot to be in against a guy who has done it hundreds of times and done it very well in Gary Patterson. So if it is a close game, that puts Ohio State in a bind because Day is so inexperienced at that role. The only thing I would say is Greg Schiano is very experienced in it, and he is the defensive coordinator / assistant head coach. So he has got a guy to lean on, but it's an interesting spot for Ryan Day, I think.
You'll be able to see that game, as I mentioned, on ESPN Player. Kickoff at, I think, 1 a.m. UK time. Don't forget that you can sign up for a monthly or annual pass to get ESPN Player's extensive coverage of college football this season, which includes more than 700 games this season live and on demand, plus three channels simulcast direct from the US, including ESPNU, the SEC Network, and the Longhorn Network. You also get access to a range of great documentaries from the ESPN Films catalogue, which includes, obviously, the great 30 for 30s, Roll Tide, War Eagle, Elway to Marino, Run Ricky Run, Catholics v Convicts, a myriad. You can also get the incredible O.J. Simpson documentary, The Five-Parter, which won an Oscar, which is the greatest single piece of television I have ever watched. That is also on there. It is absolutely incredible television. I'm not just saying that. It is incredible television. If that wasn't enough... Go on, sorry.
The other thing I'd say quickly on the ESPN Player stuff is, for someone like me who was away last Saturday, I could watch the Clemson-Texas A&M game in about 2 hours and 20 minutes because it's all chopped down and on demand. I'll do the same this week because I'm at the wedding from the stag do on Saturday. And also, end of the competition on our website and you might just win a year for free.
There you go. If that wasn't enough, when you sign up to ESPN Player, you get a 7-day free trial. I logged on the other day to watch Clemson-Texas A&M and which I obviously did then watch. But I also then was offered a myriad of different sporting events that were happening around the US. And I dipped into a little bit of college soccer just for a few minutes. There was some lacrosse going on, which is a sport I know nothing about, but was kind of mildly fascinated by and watched for a few. There's an awful lot of things on there. If you're bored of an evening, you can just have a great old kind of wend around. And we're not just saying that because they are a sponsor. They're an excellent sponsor as well. But it really is a very interesting place to find yourself on that on that website to see what they've got. Let's talk about potentially the biggest game of the season so far, the Battle of the Tigers, number 7 Auburn, number 12 LSU, a classic SEC matchup. Both schools, Matt, have been pretty persuasive in the reasons why they should be favourites for this game, haven't they? One victory already over another well-regarded foe on a neutral site, plus a beatdown of a patsy at home. Auburn more well-rounded, I suppose. We talked about them ahead of the Washington game, that defensive line, which dominated in the final down the stretch against Washington. Jarrett Stidham, a sort of more well-rounded quarterback with NFL potential. Then you have LSU, kind of the upstart LSU under Ed Orgeron, a kind of career defensive coach, I suppose, in terms of position coach. Joe Burrow, quarterback, the Ohio State transfer. And Burrow, Matt, reminds me very much, and I said it in the column, reminds me very much of the quarterbacks that won national titles with LSU under Nick Saban and Les Miles. Yeah, those kind of, you know, Exactly. That type of quarterback, a game manager who doesn't make mistakes, who leads from the front, is like a coach on the field, notably whose ego doesn't distract from the fact that actually if they're to win games, it's safer to do so on the back of the running game, on the legs of the defense kind of thing, rather than think that you've got to put the ball in my hands and I'm going to have to win the game. He's that kind of quarterback, isn't he?
Yeah, and he seems to have that nice knack that McCarron definitely had of he can make the plays when he needs to make them if he is called upon. Certainly in that Miami game, I was so impressed with him a couple of times on third down, and that was his first game for a team who he'd essentially been in the program for only a couple of months after he'd realised that Dwayne Haskins was winning the job at Ohio State. So it's going to be fascinating to see him because he performed so well in that Miami game, but I think this Auburn defense is another notch up on what he faced against Miami. So it's going to be interesting. I worry about him a little bit. The right tackle is still out, I think, for this game for LSU. Yeah. And the junior transfer kid, whose name has escaped me, who came in even on Saturday, didn't look amazing, and that was against, as you said, a patsy. So I do worry for him in this game a little bit, but I'm also totally fascinated to see how the game goes for him, because if he can put in a performance in this game, then LSU were... if LSU win this game, for me, they're a top four team immediately in the current rankings, because they'll have the best resume of anybody in college football. And if it wasn't for the fact that Alabama seemingly have to be number one, you could argue that they should be number one simply because of who they've played so far. So yeah, this is such a fascinating game, and also great that it's on the half-hour window for UK viewers.
Matt Mork and Matt Flynn were the two quarterbacks I was thinking of that won national titles for LSU under Saban and Les Miles. It's it is going to be. I mean, there's no Cam Newton in this game. There's no Leonard Fournette, but it's a game full of NFL talent, essentially. But it's also one of those real signal point games in a season, isn't it? That, you know, one of those defining moments, really, because, you know, for Auburn, having beaten Washington, who were ranked number six, if they then come in and beat an LSU team who I don't think people expected to beat Miami so comfortably and be 2-0 and be, you know, ranked number 12, it's another notch on Auburn's proverbial bedpost, isn't it?
The key for Auburn, I think, is it then allows them to split the Georgia-Alabama situation.
I was just going
to
make that point.
Get through to the CFP. That's essentially where Auburn are at in their whole season is... If they win this game, they can afford to lose to one of Alabama and Georgia and still have a really good chance of getting to the CFP. And they could get there if they lose to Alabama without even having to play in the SEC Championship game, which is another huge benefit. So, yeah, it's a massive... Every game until those games is just enormous for Auburn. And this is the most challenging they'll have as well.
Lots of unheralded players coming to the fore for LSU. Nick Brissett being one of the main ones. Brissett, who was one of the most heralded running backs in the history of Louisiana State football, that he still holds the record for most touchdowns in his career, which I think is 138, which I think was 21 ahead of the next guy. He's been terrific. He scored his first ever touchdown as a senior against Miami. He then rattled off another 100-plus yard game last week. He's been, you know, he's getting pushed all the time. The brilliant young sophomore that they love, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is pushing him. But Brissett has stepped up to the, much like Burrow, he's kind of unheralded, stepped up to the plate, kind of came from nowhere. And it's what LSU do best, isn't it? They're going to pound it on the ground, limit Auburn's possessions in terms of, you know, Jarrett Stidham being able to do what he does. And notably, diffuse that crowd at Jordan-Hare, because that will be a loud crowd, won't it?
Yeah, and I think that's why I give the main edge to Auburn this was a game Auburn lost last year, wasn't it? But in Tiger Stadium, when Auburn leading at half time and then blew it and lost, I think they were, but I'll check in a bit. So I think the point I'm making there is these big SEC games, that home field advantage is huge. I mean, we saw it firsthand at Mississippi State when they nearly beat Bama last year. It plays such a difference, and it's the reason I would give Auburn just the edge in this game.
LSU can't afford to get behind, though, can they? You don't want Joe Burrow necessarily chasing 21 points down to take. You know what Auburn will want to do is take Nick Brissett out of the game. You know,
and I think it's going to be fascinating to see how both teams try to start the game, because I'm not sure either team wants to play from behind in this game, because the defenses are so legit on the other side. it's one of those where the first 10 minutes could really determine the whole shape of the game, I think.
Absolutely. In terms of other games this weekend, Matt, is there anything else that catches your eye? There's a lot of, you know...
I mean, Texas USC does only because of kind of the intrigue around that matchup in terms of...
2006,
yeah. Yeah, it was the greatest national championship game of all time. But also, I mean, Texas, if they lose to USC at home, which I think they will...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The seat warms so badly for Tom Herman. I mean, they weren't impressive against Tulsa, were they, Texas? Like, that's the problem. You've got a bad loss against Maryland. You haven't looked good in the bounce-back game when really... That was almost like the game to determine, is Tom Herman getting through? And they were not impressive at all in a game where you'd want them to really blow doors and get back on track. So I think that's fascinating for the future of two power programs, because Clay Helton, despite starting a redshirt freshman at quarterback, is starting to feel the heat a little bit. But I think the rope is longer for Helton than it is for Herman. So that's a fascinating game for the coaching futures of two of the biggest programs in the country, I think.
I think the arguably the most exciting game of the weekend that we haven't talked about, and one that I think is plays in the early window as well at the weekend, is Boise State, Oklahoma State. I mean, Oklahoma State have had a great start to the season. It's a kind of a pick 'em matchup, really, isn't it? You could call it either way. I'm fascinated by this game. I'm fascinated by. You know, there's some really good players. Justice Hill, the running back, I think led the FBS in rushing in 2016 as a freshman, All-American the same year. He was a Doak Walker semifinalist last year. Tyler Cornelius. There's some great players on the, you know, no Mason Rudolph, obviously, no James Washington, gone off to the NFL, no Trey Flowers. But, you know, for where you had Trey Flowers, insert Jordan Brailford. You know, where you had... James Washington, insert Tylan Wallace. Where you had Mason Rudolph, insert Taylor Cornelius. Oklahoma State have got some real talent, haven't they, to make this uncomfortable for Boise State. And it should be a really, really good game.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, we spoke before the pod and I said there were three kind of lesser teams I've been so impressed by. And it was UCF, Boise State, and there was one other that I've completely forgotten, so I wasn't that impressed. I've been impressed with USF as well, actually, under Charlie Strong. I think they might be the second best team in Florida. So Boise State are great to watch as well. They've got that fun factor back that they had under Chris Peterson. That's a game that I will be watching. And final game, you might not want to watch this, Simon, but I think Florida State at Syracuse.
Yeah.
That could be 0-3 for Florida State. Yeah. I'm not sure what the line is. But I think Syracuse beat Clemson last year at home. They've got upsets in them, and with the way it's looked for Florida State, it could get even worse for Willie Taggart in that one.
I mean, Taggart is clearly not going to be sacked if they lose that. But, I mean, Syracuse are the 2.5-point underdogs, apparently. So Florida State, 2.5-point, 3-point favourites. That's not a massive differential.
That's stunning, isn't it?
Given Florida State's standing only 2 weeks ago, if FSU were to lose to Syracuse, do you think that Willie Taggart loses his job before the end of the season? Do you think that
I can't think there's any precedent for a coach at a program that big being fired in year one.
I can't think of one either. And I as a Florida State fan, I'd be amazed if he was sacked, but. I do wonder if the discontent gets to the boosters, the discontent gets to the, you know, the athletic directors, and you know, it would be a hell of a, I mean, where would you go at that point in terms of bringing somebody in? But I mean, could it be one and done for Willie Taggart?
I mean, I'm not sure. I said they could go to 1-3. They obviously beat Samford, so that couldn't happen. But even 1-2 with the first three games they've had would be. It's not really just the results either. It's how they've looked. I mean, they've looked a complete shambles.
They have.
I don't think so. I think he gets into year two, but I think I'd love to speak to the decision makers about whether they'd make that decision all over again.
Yeah, it's been an unmitigated disaster, I think, at Florida State so far. I think that's I think that's fair to say. Right. Anything else that catches your eye before we get to the Heisman?
They're the main ones for me.
Excellent. So in our Heisman, the Heisman Trophy, if you're new to college football, is the award handed to the best player each in every season. It's handed out in December by the Downtown Athletic Club of New York. Baker Mayfield won the Heisman Trophy last year. We both of us tipped Trevor Lawrence of Clemson to win the Heisman this year.
Potentially, I also tipped Kyler Murray. I'm gonna keep riding that horse.
Potentially won't happen for Lawrence this season unless all of a sudden he does break out. But you know, some interesting names in the column this week. We have Jordan Tiamo of Ole Miss, who's just been tremendous. 336 yards in week one, 448 yards against Southern Illinois, 5 touchdowns.
And obviously, they play Alabama this week.
I was going to say, makes that Alabama game.
We should have mentioned.
Yep, absolutely. And if he performs really well there, if he keeps it close, and, you know, I mean, heaven forbid, if he turns on the upset, then he vaults pretty much to number one in this part. Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin, we have at number four. Taylor had best performance of his career, 233 yards, 3 touchdowns last week. Will Greer, disappointing for him to fall from two to three, despite going 21 of 26 for 332 yards and 4 touchdowns. Dwayne Haskins jumps up. Haskins, just another tremendous performance last week. Yet to has thrown 1 interception, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception. His accuracy, as I talked about earlier on, is just unerring, and, you know, that'll be a great game and a great statement game for him on Saturday night. But Tua Tagovailoa of Alabama, 13 of 19, 224 yards, 4 touchdowns in not a great deal of game time. You know, he was out early in the third quarter. Jalen Hurts came in. It's, you know, impossible to remove him from the top of the list, really. Manny Wilkins, I think, of Arizona State. Kylan Hill, I think, had another big performance for Mississippi State, despite Nick Fitzgerald's return. Fitzgerald ran for 157 yards himself. Would you have any arguments with that top five, Matt? I know I draw up the column generally, but any arguments? Somebody, you're obviously a massive Kyler Murray fan, and you know it's hard to leave Murray out of that top five.
I think Murray has a shout. I mean, the only thing I would say is they played an FAU team that we massively overrated, and UCLA who didn't start great. So yeah, I'm happy with your top five, but I do think Kyler Murray will work his way into the mix.
Beautiful. Well, enjoy the games this weekend. As we said, we hope we've provided you with a good idea of the games you should be watching on ESPN Player. Enjoy the games, and we shall look forward to speaking to you next week. Thank you, Matthew.
Cheers, Simon.
See you later.
Good work, fella.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.